Hi, and welcome to the Planes, Trains, Automobiles, Subway, maybe an Uber or car or two edition of Sports Lit 101 for this week. I'm on the road, so this is pre-recorded. We're going to start today with some brand new sports poetry from Athlon. Then we're going to take a look at Wheels on Ice, Stories of Cycling in Alaska, and a great movie from 1988 called Bicycles on Snow. But first, a poem by Henry Stimson called Sonnet. Stimson lives in Massachusetts and is a big Celtics fan. Why do I spend my time watching basketball on TV? No matter how much drama is flashing across the screen, the ladder of my dreams is stuck in neutral, while tall men shoot three-pointers over and over, and my neural synapses fire slower or faster. They run up and down the floor, shoot and pass and rebound, chasing the ratcheting score. What would I do with the time found if I swore off the tube forever? Well, it won't happen, ever. Again, that's Sonnet by Henry Stimson. Last week I introduced a book called Wheels on Ice, Stories of Cycling in Alaska. To envision and understand this book, we're going to take a look today at a movie, Bicycles on Snow. Now, the first time we talked about this book, we talked about the original people cycling in winter over the dog sled trails from Dawson to Nome, which is in itself an incredible feat. Now we're going to talk about what has become a major event in Alaska, and that's the Iditabike. The Iditabike is a bicycle race, again on snow, which follows part of the Iditarod and other trails. To understand and envision this, it's best to watch a short film, which is free to see on YouTube. It's less than 25 minutes long. It's by a man named Mark Forman. It's about the 1988 race called Bicycles on Snow. This film captures both the spirit and the enormous challenges of the Iditabike by focusing on a few of the racers. The film showcases the inherent difficulties and requirements in this kind of mountain biking, from the need to train year-round at an elite level, prepare for all kinds of conditions, bitter cold, heavy snow, icy trails, things that can kill a rider, even the possibility that bright sun will make the trail too soft to ride, forcing weary competitors to walk their bikes. And it especially deals with the perils of riding at night. The latter is an issue as riders are only take a six-hour mandatory rest. They could take more if they wanted, but most of them don't. Since the race is 210 miles long, and the top finishers finish in about 30 hours, they're averaging a speed with their rest of about 7 miles an hour. Compare that to what the Tour de France riders average in any leg, where they cover hundreds of miles in part of a day, not even the entire day. The route of the Iditabike begins at an outpost town called Knik, or Nick, on the Iditarod Trail, goes off on the Rabbit Trail to Skwetna, loops south along the Yentna River, and they ride the river back to a section of the trail of the Iditarod Trail again that leads back to Knik. Now, viewing Bicycles on Snow makes it easier to envision the incredible feats of the earlier long-distance snow riders I talked about last week, who in the early 1900s had none of the sophisticated mountain bikes and gear used today. In the early days when the Dawson to Nome and Nome to Barrow riders were pioneering snow bike crossings of the Alaskan Yukon wilderness, they often needed three pairs of gloves with a final set of mittens and multiple layers of woolen garments and coats just to survive. They were also often pulling sleds behind them. They rode bikes without the kind of braking systems we have today, and they were much heavier than today's mountain bikes. Those riders needed to carry or purchase at the many roadhouses along the dog trails food, lodging, and supplies as they went, while the Iditabike riders carried 22 pounds of food with them. Additionally, the Iditabike check-in points along the route provide water that today's riders mix with high-energy formulas to boost their energy, replenish minerals and vitamins, but most importantly, to help prevent two of the most dangerous problems for competitors, which are frostbite and hypothermia. And once that's happened to a body, if you've had frostbite or hypothermia, you are more susceptible to it even after you've rewarmed yourself. Therefore, the night riding, which early travelers avoided when possible, but it's important in the Iditabike, carries the risk of a rider becoming disoriented or lost, which, depending on conditions, can be fatal. In short, this is a race that combines the physical conditioning and skills of an alpinist, an ultramarathoner, and World Cup cyclist. The race also spawned the revolution in fat tire bikes, which you'll see a lot of in Maine if you go to Sugarloaf or Sunday River and other ski resorts, which are like wide powder skis for alpine skiers. They make it easier to navigate some snow conditions, which further sparked an interest in snow mountain bike races at these ski resorts, including slalom-style gate racing, and big air events. But they don't use the fat bike tires so much in the Adida bike because it's a mountain biking event, and there are reasons that are too difficult to get into here as to why they don't. Now, can this kind of thing be far off for the Olympics? I can imagine that something like the Adida bike or some of these events will come into the Olympics at some part. The stories in part two of the book concern the period from the 1980s to the year 2000, when the explosion in interest in races like the Adida bike and the changes in technology brought the sport to a new level of intensity. Next week, we'll look at some of those stories. But to end this week's segment, another poem from the newest edition of Athlon, and I'll tout my own story in Athlon called Vanity Plate that just came out. Love to have you get it. That's A-E-T-H-L-O-N. If you just Google that, you can find out how to become a member of the Sport Literature Association or just how to get this wonderful, usually twice a year, anthology of great sports articles, fiction, poetry. This is by a fellow named Rob Vance, and it's called Respite During a Long Bike Ride. Every crack in the road shocks the spine's blue horizon, vibrations piercing pedals as if I walked barefoot until blistering. Each turn of the bike crank no longer reels me closer to home. Tires click like a salt-crusted bale of a boat rod. The road's white line stretched out to breaking. There's no cutting that loose. Asphalt undulates in dark waves with the intensity of summer seas until a white light, not a gull, but one car, passes close. Air shuddering with many wings and the hum of exhaust. How can my body cool in the sweet smell of burning antifreeze, the sucking swirl of something solid that is no longer there on this lonely back road, pulling me closer to a door behind which lies the quiet dark? Respite During a Long Bike Ride by Rob Vance. Well, next week I'll be not in New York State. I'll be in Florida helping my dad, but there'll be another edition of this on-the-road version of Sports Lit 101. Thanks for listening. See you next week.